beauty of sustainability is that the directions of connections are endless. David Yarrow is this. I first became aware of him through his articles in Acres USA. His subject matter is extremely varied, potently sustainable, and his presence to his topic goes beyond the mind within, sharing a place for everyone to understand and relate. Earth advocate, food and farm activist, and interdimensional adventurer is just the tip of the iceberg floating David's boat. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. David, thank you for taking time out from the Acres USA conference to speak with us.
You're very welcome. It's a joy to share information with people.
Looking over your bio, computer geek to earth steward, did the systems person in you lead the way, do you think?
Well, I have a split brain problem. I have developed myself intellectually, but also intuitively. And so, yeah, you could say that I have a whole systems mind, but I also have a spiritual mind that thinks holistically, which is a slightly different twist on the same question.
Was there a moment when you recognized that your intuition was really a driving force?
It's difficult for me to think back. It's been 20, 25 years, but I guess a key thing for me was when I discovered that I could locate water underground and discovered that we have a whole lot of intuitive faculties hardwired into our nervous system that allows us to function in an unusual mode. And I spent quite a few years mastering intuitive methods of processing the reality we live in. And it's a different adventure than studying hard math and hard science and all those physical realities of things.
Yes. Did your experience of being electrocuted have a big effect on that? I know obviously it was quite dramatic and it necessitated quite a presence of mind being driven into overdrive due to the pain that you had to endure and manage.
Yeah, well, nobody faces death that they don't get transformed in some way. And I spent 5 years not sure if I was going to live or die. So I had a long period of time to think about the issues of life and death. And then beyond that, there were various extraordinary experiences that I had, such as I was on a morphine drip for 8 weeks. And one of the effects of morphine is it separates your mind from your body. And I discovered that you don't need a body to have a mind. The mind, once freed from the body, can actually go wandering and had a lot of what's called out-of-body experiences and a variety of other very unusual, what some people would call psychic experiences that occurred during the period of my near-death and recovery. So I know very clearly that there is a spiritual aspect to life and there is a spiritual world beyond the physical. It's very hard to talk to people about this because a lot of people are very skeptical or even negative. But it's part of the reality we live in.
What would you say to someone that is not skeptical about it? What piece of that is important do you feel like that for your own life and or that you'd like to share?
Well, I would say that spiritual development is part of the birthright of human beings, that we are a young person for about 25 years of our life, and then we become an adult for about 25 years of our life. And then somewhere beyond 50, we become an elder, and we give up a lot of the physical and material aspects of life. And becoming an elder should be the beginning of our real spiritual journey on the earth. And unfortunately, in our culture today, we do not support this reality. And a lot of our elders become sick and lose possession of their mind and their bodies and are not functional. And this is part of the tragedy of our world today, is that human beings are denied the last and most important phase of their life, which is their spiritual development. Mm-hmm. And everyone needs to claim this and begin to understand how to develop themselves as spiritual beings. this is part of the tragedy of our world today, is that we limit ourselves and focus on the material aspects of reality. And that's all right. The material world is quite real, but there is something beyond that. The spiritual dimension of things is where we're supposed to land before we leave the physical world.
Oh, beautifully said, David. Your life is quite varied and sustainable in itself by being able to move in and out of many different directions, but they all do lead, in my what I've understood about what you do, into a very sustainable, holistic focus. And so today's interview, excuse me if I seem to be going bouncing around, but there's so much I want to talk to you about. But let's go back into the dowsing, and perhaps you could share what you do with the dowsing and maybe one of your more astounding experiences with that.
Yeah, well, I've been doing dowsing for over 35 years, since around 1975 or so is when I learned. And I learned that I was quite good at it, and I practiced real hard and developed a lot of proficiency. Over the course of the years, I've taught several hundred people that they too can locate water underground, that it's really a natural ability that we all have. Every body is a water body, so of course we can find where there's water. It's something that we're commonsensibly equipped to be able to do. And so I've learned a lot about the nature of water and how water exists inside the earth. It's quite different than most people's conception of these things. And in the process, discovered that there are also even more subtle things than water, that there are different types of energy fields that we can also learn to detect through dowsing. And I've learned to map and to understand the subtle energy anatomy of the landscape. For example, there are about 35 plants that I recognize grow in response to these subtle energy fields. And when they are growing in certain spots and fields, or even in park cemeteries or public lawns, they indicate that there's some type of energy field present in the earth right there. For example, time grows where there are these vertical columns of magnetic flux coming down from the sky. Or on the opposite extreme, Indian paintbrush grows on the land where there is a type of energy field that comes up out of the earth. And so I've dramatically expanded my perception of what nature is doing and the principles by which nature gets organized. And it's really given me a radically different view than what most people take as being science, because I understand that there is a invisible template that allows nature, allows ecological systems to achieve order and integrity of balance. And this is part of what I've learned how to evaluate and sense and understand through dowsing.
So you use dowsing for more than just finding water.
The principal thing that I do for dowsing is not find water for people. I try and locate what I call sacred space. And a sacred space is a place where you have like a lens, or what's the word I want, a focal point, where the flows of energy in the landscape and the flows of water under the land all come to a central meeting place. And you have in that space a stronger field of this subtle energy, and it enhances your own subtle energy. And there are places which naturally invite people to transcend the material aspects of the world. This is why very commonly cathedrals and churches and other sacred structures are put at these kinds of spots in the earth. It's because human beings intuitively recognize these places and put our own spiritual centers at these spots. So this is the thing I'm most concerned about, is to rediscover the subtle energy anatomy of the land and to understand the earth as a living, holistic organism.
David, I wonder sometimes about the sacred ground. I know that many cultures, and as you mentioned, the early churches throughout Europe, of course, were placed on very much sacred ground, or geometrically and slash geographically intersecting points of energy is where they got built. But isn't, you know, if we take the entire earth as sacred ground, I mean, where I'm standing right now really truly is sacred ground just by the fact that it is. And I'm wondering, is it solely a focus on the outer, or if we really have a very strong focus on the inner, is there really sacred ground here as opposed to there?
Well, you're right in the sense that the whole universe is a great sacred mystery that we are honored to be able to participate in and experience. But given the Earth, there are certain places which have a stronger energy field than other places, or even some places which have a debilitating or negative or disorganizing effect on human beings and other living organisms. So the Earth is a very varied and diverse sacred space, and some of these spaces are enhancing and some are debilitating. And it's important to become aware of these and to work with them. Good example is just a couple weeks ago, I had Thanksgiving with my cousin in Kansas. We hadn't seen each other in 50 years, and she had been sleeping on her couch for about 4 months because she just couldn't get any sleep in her bed. And so we checked her bed and discovered that she was sleeping on a 2-foot-wide and very shallow water vein. And it wasn't just her. Her son visited, and he slept in her bed. She was sleeping on the couch, and he didn't sleep well that night either. So we moved her bed, and since we moved her bed the day after Thanksgiving, she's been able to sleep soundly in her bed for the first time in 4 years. It's slowly changing the rest of her life because she now has a sense of security about her ability to rest at night and to be able to then get up and go out and work every day. So it's had a very profound effect on changing her energy level, but it's also had a more subtle effect on changing certain features of her psychology and personality. And these are things that are still working themselves out, but there's an aspect to sacred space which is very important to help us to understand how to live more intelligently on the earth, and how to make choices about where to put our houses or not, and where to put our businesses or our sacred ceremonial places or not. And we need to become much more aware of these things and make much more conscious choices about how we're living on the earth if we're going to have a future here.
What makes something disorganized or debilitating on the earth? Are there obvious points to why it is that way? You just mentioned a water vein. What is another one, or is that the most prevalent one that there is?
No, there's a whole assortment of things, and I wouldn't even claim to know it all. I've just learned a few things over the course of my years of exploring. For example, the magnetic field of the Earth. Since we began shooting satellites out into space, we have now been able to map the entire magnetic bubble that the Earth sits inside of, and we've learned quite a bit about it. One thing we've learned, for example, is that there are certain places in the North Pole where there is south polar magnetic flux coming out of the Earth. You can see them now marked on aeronautical and aviation maps because magnetic navigation systems do not function in these reverse polarity magnetic fields. And so one of the consequences of this for practical reality is that electrons are attracted to the north magnetic pole, and protons, or positive charges, are attracted to the south pole. So where you have a south polar magnetic field coming out of the Earth in the northern hemisphere, you're going to have an excess of positive charges in the soil. And it's going to affect the way plants grow. It'll affect the way your body metabolizes. If you're living and sitting in a spot that has this reverse flux magnetic field in it. And so we're beginning to become more scientifically advised of the subtleties and complexities of the Earth's energy field and how it shapes ecology and biology.
And I happen to have gotten a front row seat and explored because I learned how to douse for these energy fields, where scientists are still learning to measure and detect them.
Is the focus used for dowsing different than a focus, say, for remote viewing?
Well, they're different disciplines. They both use what I call our inner senses. We have five outer senses that plug us into the physical outside world, but we also have certain inner senses, one of which, of course, is the ability to sense magnetic fields. It's not any unusual thing. Any creature on the earth, from birds and whales on down to snails and fishes, know how to find their way home. They know how to navigate magnetically. And so we have a set of inner senses, the first of which we could call our magnetic sensing ability. And learning to tune into these inner senses shifts the way that you understand the reality you're living in, and opens you up to a whole set of other perceptions of how the earth, how living things operate, and how they're organized.
Why do you think you're so successful as a teacher of dowsing? Do you feel like you psych into the individual or the process of dowsing itself, or maybe both? I don't know.
Well, I like to demystify things. I don't like to make things into elaborate and mysterious sorts of things. I think that dowsing is a practical physical, you can say physical, but a practical skill that we all have. It's hardwired into our physiology. And my experience is it takes people about 15 minutes to discover that they have this ability. And because I like to demystify things, I also make them very simple so people don't have to get confused. Instead, it's just a simple 1, 2, 3, and off you go process. Mm-hmm. And I happen to love to teach, and I do excel at taking things that seem to be complex and difficult to understand and putting them into simple, ordinary, common language that people can understand and put to work.
You spoke earlier about being in Kansas, and I know recently you gave a talk there entitled Learn to Read the Land. What's the first step?
The first step? Well, if you're going to live on the land, the first thing you need to do is find out where the water is. That's the first thing that we need in terms of the resources of the environment, is a good source of fresh, clean, wholesome, potable water. And so as a dowser, that's the first thing I do when I walk onto a site, usually, is I try and find out where are the springs, where are the water veins, where are the water sources, and map those out and try and identify what are the valuable or usable sources. And then I might start look at the subtle energy of the land and proceed from there.
As an advocate for our physical health care, what do you consider the pressing issues that are perhaps not in the obvious foreground right now?
Oh, well, the number one issue that I'm concerned about is the connections between food and wholeness and health. As much as we have learned in the last 35, 40 years that I've been doing this work about the connections between the quality of our diet and the condition of health in our body, we still do not fully understand how to live and how to eat in this culture. It's just, here I am at the Acres USA conference, the whole conference devoted to ecological agriculture, and I walk around and I look at people, and I'm sad to say that a lot of the people, including the farmers here, are not healthy people, because even though they work with producing high-quality food, they still lack the fundamental knowledge of how to eat food in order to create health in their own body. And it's, to me, very sad that we have such an advanced society, and yet the simple process of choosing what to eat every day should be such a complicated mystery and produce so much sickness and tragedy as it's doing in today's world. Mm-hmm. I mean, George McGovern, the man who ran for president in the Vietnam War years, after his anti-war years, he was chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs, and they published a report in the late 70s in which they identified that 6 of the 10 leading causes of death in the U.S. are caused by diet. And it still hasn't changed. We still haven't been able to make a dent in this situation. Or another example is I just bought the recent Scientific American, and they had the science sleuth in there talking about the mysterious causes of disease. And in the whole article, he never once talked about the role that food and diet plays in creating your blood quality and how blood quality then affects the health and well-being of the whole rest of your body. The kind of foolishness that we have today in today's world is that people go to see their doctor and they get all kinds of medical diagnosis for extreme conditions, and the doctor tells them they can eat whatever they want. Irresponsible for medical people to tell people that.
The title of that article alone should have been squashed, The Mystery, because let's not have it be a mystery. It isn't really. There's a lot that goes on that we can't scientifically see, and I guess that was the whole point since it was written in Scientific American.
The scientific view is unfortunately very complex and difficult to understand. It's intended to be difficult to understand. This is why scientists are needed. What I try and do, like I said earlier, is to simplify things and break them down into words, concepts, and images that people can understand and put to use in their lives.
As an alternative healthcare practitioner myself, I know that doctors rarely, if ever, speak to or about the lymph system.
Yeah.
Why don't you share something of your understanding that isn't commonly known or addressed?
Yeah, well, this is one of those really tragic things that I've discovered. The lymphatic system is most of the water in our body. We are a bag of water. We came out of the ocean in evolution by creating a skin to enclose our body so we could carry the ocean around inside of us, and that is our lymphatic system, this vast amount of water that our organs float in and that bathes and moisturizes the whole inside of our body. And it's really quite a mystery to most people. Most people have some idea that they have a blood system with veins and arteries and a heart, but most people have not a clue about their lymphatic system or what it does. And yet, my experience in doing health and diet counseling is that this is the first challenge most people face, is they have to clean out their lymphatic system. The reason for this is because the lymph system is how our body gets rid of waste. The lymph system collects all of the waste from the cells and metabolism of your body, and your blood carries it to your kidneys, which filter it, but your lymphatic system, most of the water in your body, carries it to your lower abdomen where your large intestine collects all that waste and secretes it into your bowel so you can pass it out of your body. And so the lymphatic system is one of the two key systems in the body that remove waste. And for most people, this system has not been working, and they have accumulated waste, which they usually call weight. And then people begin to experience various kinds of toxicity because of the accumulation of waste in their body. And then they're headed down the path towards eventual degenerative disease. Now, for example, in the fall, in Chinese medicine, they understand that each season has its own activity, its own organs which become active. And in the fall, it's the large intestine and the lungs, which are the two organs that regulate your lymphatic system. So I think everyone in America knows that the fall, October, November, is flu season and cold season, and all these respiratory discharges of mucus happens. And what I know is that this is because the body is trying to get rid of this waste from the lymph system. The large intestine and the mucous membranes down there can't do the job. And so the secondary way for the body to try and get rid of this excess waste is through the respiratory system. And so people have big mucus discharges from their sinuses, from their lungs, from their throat, from the respiratory system. And this is all, as I said, the function of our lymphatic system to keep the inside of our body clear and clean of waste and to keep it from getting toxic inside. And so for most people, when they start a healing diet, this is the first job they have to do, is they have to get rid of all this waste and toxicity and clean up their body. And so that's the first part of their job, is just removing this accumulated toxicity and restoring clean, healthy balance to the inside of the body. Once that is done, then the body can begin serious work to regenerate itself. But first it has to detoxify.
And do you have a certain method that's your favorite method to do this?
Well, this is one of the important rules about natural healing, is that I don't heal people, and food doesn't heal people, and herbs don't really heal people. The truth of the matter is that the body heals itself. And what we have to do is we have to support and nurture the body in order to activate its inherent intelligence to be able to move to a state of balance and integrity and health. And so in terms of a method, I don't have a specific method. I just look at somebody's body and try and understand what is going on with their internal organs and how to help those organs function in a more optimal way and move that person's body back towards health and wellness.
We recently spoke with Robert Kane from Sea Agra regarding remineralization of the land. And since you just brought up our lymph system being our own private ocean, so to speak, is that why you got involved with the Sea Agra in the first place?
No. Actually, to be perfectly clear, I helped start Sea Agra. Bob and I actually shook hands at his house back in 2003 and agreed to start the business. The reason I did that is because myself, in 1976, I saw the CO2 curve, a graph showing the level of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere, now made famous by Al Gore in his movie, An Inconvenient Truth. And when I saw that curve in 1976, I recognized it as an exponential curve, and I realized that near the end of my lifetime, that curve would start to turn up very rapidly and probably get more vertical than horizontal, which meant that we would have a period of rapid and accelerating change on the planet. And here we are on the edge of this time now.
We'll conclude our interview with David Yarrow next week at 12 noon on Sunday. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.